Hello world, this is Dr. Kulmeet Kanlas and I'm a primary care physician. Thank you very much for joining me in this YouTube live session video podcast for a very important topic on memory and dementia. Do you know the early signs of dementia? If you don't know, I won't be surprised, because not only general public is not very aware till it becomes too late, and also as physicians, we are not tuned to pick up this very early subtle signs of dementia. So let's all together go through the journey about understanding the functioning which involves thought. How do we understand ourselves? Each human being has five domains. Number one is physical, which is your body. Number two is emotional, which we covered in detail in the previous live sessions and podcasts. Third is your spiritual domain, which is your personal GPS. And fourth is your cognitive or thought. And fifth is your social. Today, we will be talking about cognitive or the thought processes, because they as a whole involve what dementia is and what we could do about dementia. That will be our primary focus of discussion today. That will be on disorders or less than optimal functioning of our thought process. And we will delve deep into how this thing interacts with our social environment and everything which it involves to keep you at home. Let's first try to debunk certain myths. Dementia, when we talk about dementia, is we in vernacular equate it to the memory loss. That is not dementia is. To understand dementia, we need to understand what our body does on normal basis, when it's, or our mind does when it involves thought. A, according to DSM-5, for dementia, they look at six domains of functioning of your thought process. Number one is attention and concentration. Say, for example, you are somewhere where bazillion things are happening, but at a given point, your mind is aware of only one thing. That is where your attention is. And when you can focus your attention for a prolonged period of time on that particular object, that is concentration. So first domain of your thought functioning is your attention and concentration. Second domain now is your critical processing of information or analytical thinking. You are given a particular problem, you understand that problem, you go through pros and cons of that problem, and then you come up with a proper planning, proper functioning about what this needs to be done. That is the critical functioning of your cognitive processes or thought. Third domain is learning and writing. Fourth domain, we are very clear about what learning and writing is. And fourth domain is language. And six is your hand-eye coordination or spatial orientation. Let's elaborate this one. I think if we understand this, then the rest of the talk will be very easy to follow and you will be able to understand it completely. Brain, when we talk about, as we talk, brain does primarily two main functions. Number one, regulation of emotions. Number two, the six domains which we just now elaborated. Those are attention and concentration, critical thinking, language, learning, and memory, and then spatial orientation. Now, how have you ever noticed when you're driving or you're doing, there are bazillion things which are going on in your environment. What triggers which catches your awareness to see or pay attention to that event? That is, and the way the brain look at it, brain is the so far most sophisticated computer which is known on this earth. Brain has two capabilities. Like all the computers so far we have, they have a linear thinking. You do one, it leads to output of second, that leads to third. It's like in a serial. In brain, you give the information, not only it can do the serial calculation, it can go parallel tracks and then come up with the things, concepts, and everything. So in turn, brain is an information processing machine. So far, even with the advent of artificial intelligence, deep learning, and all those different modalities, neural nets, what we are trying to do here is we are trying to develop or mimic how brain does everything day to day naturally. And we are trying to copy those fraction of those models, and we have trying to ensure that we could recreate that functioning of the brain. So brain is a very complex computer. And the other beautiful part is it distributes the functioning. Say, for example, we talked about attention, orientation, concentration, critical thinking, language, learning, memory, spatial orientation. Brain nature distributes all over the brain into different parts, and each part contributes to create a realistic picture. That is the beauty and complexity which we all are trying to understand that part. Now, when we talk about dementia, by and large, we think it is related to only memory. That is not dementia. Dementia is a lot more bigger. It involves pretty much all the main neurocognitive or your functions of your thought process, which are required for you to be working and doing this one part. So that's the first myth. Second part is, most of the time, why when we start slipping on our memory, why it provokes so much of a mental commotion, intellectual commotion, and why we seek help? Because memories is the storehouse of information. If a brain is a information processing unit, then memory is the hard drive. That is where all the information, whether we obtain experience of those stored information in the form of experience through our five senses, that is experiential knowledge and memory, or implicit memory, which comes out of understanding, knowledge, wisdom, which impacts pretty much how our emotions are day-to-day working, that is your implicit memory. All these things combined is a smaller part of the bigger picture. We will take up all these things in a systematic fashion so that we don't get digressed. But what I'm trying to first myth is that it is a lot more bigger problem than what we think. It is not only a memory problem. It is a lot more bigger than that. So long as we keep that thing in mind, then we will be very good to understand that part. In the brain, the ultimate unit, like ultimate cell, which is of brain, we call neuron. Neuron has a body from which a long rope-like thing extends, which we call axon, and then the axon divides into multiple small connections, like small ropes, and they make a connection with other axon, dendrites and axons of other neuron cells, which lead to multiple millions or trillions of synapses. Each axon divides into approximately 10,000 small parts, which they make connections with the other. So cell, axon, then the small connections coming out, they're interacting with it, and that is makes the fundamental unit of the brain. So whatever disease, if it has to affect it can be the problem in the neuron itself. Then the axon, around the axon, there is like in the electric wiring of our house, there is a sheath around it. The same way each axon has a wiring, which we call myelin sheath. Then the smaller part, then they making a synapse with the similar parts of another neurons. Beautiful part is one nerve cell does not come in physically contact with the another nerve cell. There is a space between those synapses, and there are certain chemicals which we call neurotransmitters. They get released and they go from one end to the another and start the electrical activity into the different neuron. So the current, the transfer of information in a neuron is electrical. In between synapses is chemical. Then that chemical goes and excites and inhibits the next neuron. That is the fundamental basis how neurons work. So those chemicals, we're going to talk about in detail, the chemicals in the synapses, they are very important. Now, so far with this background, let's understand how the brain, these functions, as I said, they are all distributed all over the brain. In brain, there is a big lobe of in the posterior part of the brain, which we call occipital lobe, that is primarily dedicated to our eyes, the visual cortex. Then it's the temple or the temporal lobe. This is the site where you have a learning, primarily memory and language. Then the parietal part, that's where your motor and sensory system is. And then your ability to navigate space, that is the where you have parietal. And in the frontal part is the critical thinking or the executive part or your self-will. Everything lies in the front part of it. Is like in Indian mythology or the Indian culture, basically unconsciously they have attributed certain ritual practice or religious practices to each part of the brain. And in all the Asiatic cultures, the area in this in between the eyebrows is considered the seat of the intelligence. And that's where you have a prefrontal cortex. Your observation, which we have carried over the centuries, and we have learned all those things, they have now meeting or coming in connection with, or it's been approved by the science, those observations were correct. With moving along, understanding that dementia is bigger than only memory, understanding that different functions are distributed all over the body and they affect each other, and also understanding the functioning of the neuron. Now let's build on it. All the cognitive diseases and especially dementia, which we are talking about. In dementia, what happens is these neurons, they either go under degeneration and die away, or they are not functioning properly. So what that leads to is they are slowly they start losing the function of these neurons. And once they are losing the function of these neurons, we start getting the symptoms pertaining to that part of it. Now, let's go back to neuron. This neuron cell body, to keep it healthy, it requires A, if you don't use it, you lose it. Well, that's a true in case of muscle. The same is true in terms of our nerve cells or the neuron cells. If we don't use our brain, it will start becoming dull. Mental stimulation is very important, meaning intellectual work, reading, writing, thinking, meditation, all these things are very important for the cells to remain alive, thrive. Like when we talk about the treatments, like of the how to prevent memory loss, you will find the techniques like doing crossword puzzles, Sudoku, playing chess, all these things are entirely geared towards keeping your brains alive and well. Now, next comes in is, if there is a problem with the sheathing around the axon or myelin, you will have memory loss. Then you go to synapse, those chemicals. When we talk about, first part is attention and concentration. There is a neurotransmitter which is called epinephrine and non-epinephrine. They, like say for example, just to evoke some more interest. For example, you drink coffee, a tea or beverage, hot beverage of your choice. Suddenly you get a rush that you feel energetic. You are oriented more. You perceive your environment more. That is your attention. That is where these chemicals are producing a neurotransmitter, which is epinephrine, norepinephrine, into those synapses, and that leading to more wider stimulation and helping. So second place where it will not work is this one, is that we have a problem, is that if the neurotransmitters have a problem, we will have the issue. When it comes to motivation, there is a neurotransmitter, dopamine. If the level of that goes down, you will be less motivated, you will be less active, less started. Then feel-good hormone, serotonin, if the level of that goes down, you will feel depressed. If you have, there are two other peptides, glutamate and GABA. Glutamate is this excitatory, like when it gets made, it excites more neurons, and the function which we are trying to improve, it will improve. And if we want to stop something, then we increase GABA. Then comes is acetylcholine, and that is the one which is primarily involved in memory. So what I wanted to discuss here is acetylcholine is the neurochemical or the neurotransmitter which is very important in memory production, memory storage, memory retrieval. Then different parts of the brain are doing different function. When we talk about memory, the information has to be, we see something, we hear something, we touch something, that gets converted into chemical energy. Then it passes to the neuron, go through a nerve tract, goes to the brain, goes to the individual cells, and it creates a highway of electrical stimulation. And this highway needs to be kept alive. Otherwise, if we electrical activity happen, and if we don't repeat the information, we don't store this information in a way so that we could recall, then we will start losing memory. So that's why this neurochemical acetylcholine is very important there. There are certain parts of the brain which have been very well studied when it comes to memory. Is there is another part, we in the middle part, there is like a seahorn type, like a area which we call hippocampus, and that is the area which is very important in the storing of the information. It's in a computer analogy, when we have create a file on a computer, we click file and save as. And then when we click with save as, that information gets stored and we could retrieve it later. In the brain, hippocampus is equivalent to save as. Like all these studies initially which were done, we found the people who were losing memory, this hippocampal area was going through a big more degeneration than rest of the parts of the brain. So we implicated initially a lot of research understanding to this area, but now we are diving more and more deeper as we are understanding the distribution of the different modalities into different parts. But the point which I was trying to do, when we talk about memory, there is acetylcholine, we need to understand it very clearly, and also we need to understand this hippocampal area, because if it goes through a degeneration, you will not be able to save. You will perceive it, information will come to brain, it will never be saved. And that is also one of this area in the brain where our brain stem cells are recognized, and it's continuously repair So all the medications so far we have, they are basically targeted towards this neurotransmitter acetylcholine. Now, let's discuss, we describe dementia. How this so far discussion which we have, how do we tie it up? Now we have a neuron, axon, sheath around it, then the chemicals. That's the ultimate unit of this function. There are six domains in science as we talking today, which are recognized by the panel of expert DSM-5. They feel that once there is a deterioration in two or more of these domains, you basically function in this world less than optimal. And that's why you will have difficulty in carrying out yourself. Let's understand what it will take to live independently. Dementia is a problem of elderly unless you have one specific reason. But for our discussion, let's understand and presume that we are dealing with a senior. This senior, just imagine that he has all the resources in this world at his disposal. So that's not what we are trying to do. Now, he has at home, he has to get out of bed. He should be able to walk. He should be able to use the bathroom, take care of self needs. He should be able to cook, clean, prepare food, keep his space up where he's living, up kept. Then he should be able to keep the surrounding of the house clean. Above all, even though he may have the resources, he has to navigate in this world. He has to manage his medications. He has to communicate with other people. He must be able to transport him from one place to another. He must be able to recognize and do this part. Activities which we technically require just to maintain ourselves, like getting out of bed, going to bathroom, cooking, cleaning, putting clothes on ourselves, showering, shaving, all these basic activities of living we call as ADLs or activities of daily living. Any activity which is beyond that, which is a higher level of involvement, whether you have to communicate outside, you have to hire help, you have to go to doctor's office, you have to manage yourself, all these things are, we categorize them instrumental activities of daily living. The point here is to live even with abundant resources, you not only have to take care of yourself, you have to navigate in this world. Now, according to DSM-5, there is a spectrum. When we see patients in our clinics, usually they have crossed all this limit. When somebody has lost mental faculties to the point that he or she cannot maintain herself at home, or has a difficulty in taking care of day-to-day activities, or their behavior is getting or leading to a lot of load or problems on the caregiver, that is the time we have pretty much lost the boat. And unfortunately, even though there's a lot of research has gone, we know a lot more than this entity which we knew it for 10 years ago. Still, we know, we are at a stage, we know that these are the things that happen. We have developed certain novel medications to help, we are experimenting, but we are not there yet. So in case of dementia, prevention is the hallmark. If we cannot do everything to prevent it, treating it still is in future significantly, even though we have made strides, but we are nowhere there. According to DSM, when it start affecting us, that we cannot maintain ourselves, that is the time as a disease. So what happens before? Usually, let's start with the natural history of aging. All of us have a difficulty recognizing people, where I kept my cards or car keys or glasses, or
I went to shopping and I forgot what the hell I'm doing here. So these things happen. These are called cognitive impairment. That's not dementia, because that means that you're slipping here and there, but you slip by and large able to function by yourself. If these things are occasional, it's called mild cognitive impairment. It's not a disease yet. Once these things start happening more frequently, that you're forgetting all the time your glasses, you're forgetting why you went to the supermarket, or you're getting lost in the supermarket, all those things, then we call mild cognitive disorder, MCI. And that's, again, in this place, you are still able to function, you are still able to care for yourself. When you start forgetting, you see the keys and you are asking what this key is for. Forgetting keys somewhere else is mild cognitive insufficiency or deficiency. But if you forget what this key is used for, or you went to supermarket and you forget what this place is, or you see a person and you don't even know whether this is a human being or this thing, when you reach that stage, you start losing the essence of those objects, things, and events, then it's called dementia. Now, what happens if you start losing these faculties? First is, this means you will not be able to care for yourself and take care of activities of daily living. And also you become dependent on instrumental activities of daily living. So this means somebody has to supplement. Either your family member, your spouse, or your friends, they all have to pitch in. And those things add a lot of stress on the healthcare system and also on the caregiver. Now, why this problem is so big? Why we are having this problem to such a high level? What is happening here is, we do not have effective medication to treat dementia. Only thing which we could do is prevent it. Dementia is going to affect your activities of daily living, both physically, it's emotionally devastating. You will be impaired cognitively. Your social relationships will be totally tested, and most of the time they fall apart. So we all need to work together in our 30s, 40s. That is where we need to develop healthy lifestyle. Still today, prevention is the only best thing which we have. Now, question comes in is, what kind of lifestyle which we have to live in our younger years to improve this one is? So it goes back to understanding yourself. Let's take a talk about our body, our five domains of every human being. Body. Body needs adequate, proper nutrition, balanced nutrition. Not the crazy which is going on our total meat focused diet and total plant-based diet. Balance is in the middle. Balanced diet, which provides you all the quality carbohydrate, proteins, vitamins, minerals, essential fatty acids, and all the trace elements which maintain function of your nerve cells and those chemicals which are get released in the synapses. So your diet should be primarily plant-based, meat to taste, quality fats, nuts, legumes, and quality fruits, fresh, not the stored one. Second, proper sleep. 30-minute exercise, minimum 5 days a week, preferably 7 days a week. Now comes to our emotional health. It is proven that people who have consistent history of severe anxiety and depression, they are at very high risk to develop dementia. So manage your stress and depression. Next, your social environment is made up of 5 things only: other people, places, things, time, and event. social stimulation is very important. You need to have strong relationship with somebody, whether it's your family member or friends. You must have a strong sense of belonging to somebody. If you are not, you will be socially isolated, depressed, and eventually demented. Now let's come to cognitive wise. Remember I said the cell needs stimulation? That is where intellectual exercises, reading, writing. What is reading and writing is, that's the same way the weight training is for your muscles. So reading, writing, reciting in the terms of crossword puzzles, Sudoku, playing chess, anything which give you get up and go and give you a kick, you need to get involved in intellectual pursuit. If you don't do that, you will have difficulty in the later stages of the game. Then comes in is smoking. You must not smoke. Smokers have proportionally very high rate of dementia. Excessive alcohol intake and substance abuse will kill your memory. Then comes medications. That is a big class. Remember I told you acetylcholine is the one which is primarily involved in memory formation and storage. You will be surprised how many medications seniors use on a daily basis which directly inhibit their memory. Let's start with first all the older generation allergy medications. Our seniors take Benadryl, Phenergan, hydroxyzine like candies. Yes, when they were growing up, those medications were the main medications. Now we have safer medication with very little anticholinergic functions. So we must not take any allergy medication over the counter. We must talk to our primary care physician and take the newer, safer anti-allergy medication, if God forbid you need it, which have very little anticholinergic function. Second, all the PM medication, Tylenol PM, Ibuprofen PM, they all have Phenergan, and that will anticholinergic, and that will affect your memory. Antidepressants. Antidepressant, not as a class, but Paxil, and it was one of the initial antidepressant which was released. It has the highest level of anticholinergic effects. You may not be depressed, but you are demented. Same way, older generation tricyclic antidepressant, amipramine, desamipramine, those were used for depression. They are effective for depression, but they are highly anticholinergic. Then few cardiac dysrhythmia medications have anticholinergic medications. All the GI medications could have anticholinergic functions. Now, point with which I'm trying to make it is, have your medications reviewed by your physician and ask them if any of this could be decreased or stopped, which has primarily anticholinergic. Like one of the biggest problems which we see in primary care clinic is incontinence. We have our senior ladies who have significant amount of these urinary incontinence, and all the medication they need to keep themselves wet have predominantly anticholinergic properties. So we need to live healthy so that we don't need these medications, so that we could prevent these complications. So medication is the bigger chunk which we have. Now, as a primary care physician, I want to share with you how do we evaluate you for dementia. So far, we established that dementia is not only a memory issue. It involves other cognitive functions. And it is not a problem till it starts affecting you to live independently or your behavior start affecting your caregivers. Then we talked about neurotransmitter. I went over the lifestyle which we should be living. It's never late to start. But younger we are and we start doing these things, it will help. Now let's go to, as a primary care physician, how do we evaluate you? Remember, everything which we do And we get this question all the time is, how do I know I have dementia? What kind of test I have? And I think that's what I will answer now. Let's start with how we as a primary care physician or any other intern, any physician evaluates you. When we get a call from you guys to make appointment, if you made the call and you showed up at a proper time, yes, we send you the notifications to come in. It checks the box of that you are independent for instrumental activities of daily living. Fact that you can recognize you have a problem, fact you are able to navigate the healthcare system, make appointment, and then you are able to come to our office at a given time, that is a plus mark. But now, if you start skipping your appointments, you don't show up, or you said nobody called me, or I didn't make appointment, believe me, this happens to every doctor's office every day. Then we start worrying about yourself. We know that you are losing your instrumental activities of daily living. Then we start paying attention to you more, and we start working towards that part. Now you showed up in our office, and we see you, how you behave with our receptionist. Were you able to provide proper insurance card? You were able to bring your medications to us. That again, we are now getting into the ADLs and instrumental activities or daily living. The fact that you came, you were able to drive, you came to our office, and then in the exam room, you are able to sit in a chair properly, get up yourself. And when we talk to you, you are cooperative with the examination and you are able to give us proper history. These all ties up that you are independent for ADLs. But let's reverse the feature. If you cannot get out of car, every day I go to the parking lot and see 4 and 5 senior times a day, where I go and check out those seniors right there. We go and take the vitals and everything, because we know that they cannot get out of the car and they will have very hard time. We know for a fact from there that you are becoming active, dependent for activities or daily living. Then what are the tests we do? When you come to our offices, we talk to you, we take history, we examine you. Actually, your examination is not just for when we palpate your stomach or your chest or any part of the examination. Actually, your examination starts right from your phone call. This is everything goes in hand. Try to understand what's going on. Now, what are the tests which we need? Remember, I said there is no medicine which is effective for prevention of the memory loss or dementia. But what we do here is we do routine blood work. Sometimes we do x-rays. Sometimes we do CAT scanning of brain, MRI, PET scan. These tests are done primarily to look at the risk factors. Like, what are the risk factors you might have had which will lead to memory loss? So we just go through these things in order to risk stratify you. See, in medicine, what happens is we start with the young and beautiful body and mind and spirit and intellect. From there, then we develop vices and we develop risk factors. Those risk factors lead to chronic medical problem. Then chronic medical problem lead to end organ damage and ultimate demise. So when we are doing these tests, we basically are looking into what more we could do to understand your risk factor. If we could intervene either with medication or with some procedure to halt it. But there is no test you need. Basically, when your doctor diagnoses your dementia or memory loss or cognitive impairment, it's a both clinical diagnosis based on your history and examination and your risk factor assessment. We do these tests because we want to know you more. We do this one part, but there is no one particular test. Then I think it's a good time to discuss what are the chemical changes which might be happening. What are the tests or what are the things that are happening inside the brain neurons which lead to memory loss. The most common or most independent reason for memory loss is Alzheimer's disease. Second, Lewy body dementia. Number three, frontopietal dementia and Parkinson's disease, severe anxiety and depression. All these changes lead to excessive memory loss. These are neurodegenerative diseases. If you have 100 people with memory loss, but 70 to 80% will have currently Alzheimer's disease. Second will be small ischemic changes or the small strokes, in a lack of better word, leading to function loss of function in different part of the brain. Vascular dementia is the second. Then the Lewy body, those are the specialist neurotransmitter diseases which happen. I just wanted to mention them here for the completion of this talk, but I don't think they are important at this time. But I wanted you to know is the number one reason for this neurodegenerative disease where your neurons don't work or we are losing number of neurons is your Alzheimer's disease. Second is your vascular. Third could be trauma and a host of things after that. Now, medications. All the medications which we have, let's talk about first general medications and then we'll talk about few newer futuristic medications coming in. We know for a fact in Alzheimer's disease, there is a amyloid apoprotein E4. It's like a protein which is getting secreted into and clogging up this neuron function and killing the neurons. So most of the activities which are for the Alzheimer's disease, for this pathological process, all the research is how do we stop the production of this protein. Then comes in is that we know that the acetylcholine is involved in keeping this neuron functioning. All the medications which we have so far, they work on primarily the keeping this acetylcholine alive on those synapses. You might have heard the common medications, which is first is donepezil. It goes with the trade name Aricept. Then Exelon of rivastigmine or galantamine or memantamine. These are all medications. They work only on one process. They are trying to make that acetylcholine last in that synapse longer. There is an enzyme which detoxify acetylcholine. They are trying to stop that acetylcholinesterase inhibit that enzyme. They block them so that the level improve and whatever new functions neurons are left with, they could function properly. That is a fundamental mechanism. See here, we have not done anything but the chemical thing which is happening, all those neurotangles which we are developing. We are still at the level of, we know what happened in physiology and we are trying to do that. Now the problem with these medications are, A, it's very difficult to assess the efficacy of these medications. These medications in different studies have to be taken for a long time. Now, the problem as a primary care or geriatrician comes in is you are dealing with the 89-year-old or 90-year-old person or 70-year-old person, and you're giving this medication and you have no objective way of assessing it. You're just going by research studies, which have been, and then the irony is, most of the research studies are funded by the pharmaceutical companies. So they have a bias around having the results positive, or they have also, we have to rely on their data. When they say, if you use this medication for so many years, you could see this improvement. Every physician's experience is different with this medication. So one is that we have a very difficult, when we start treating you, we do not know how to follow you that closely because there is no chemical or radiological marker which we could follow. It's just your subjective improvement which comes from caregivers or it comes from the family members. Second, these medications, have a lot of side effects. Most common is nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, confusion, and you're confused with. So it's, and sometimes headaches. So it's a, we do have medications. If you meet the criteria, we will prescribe the medication because we don't have tools. But there are few, there is a hope. And the hope here is now with the advent of biologics. Biologics is, we know that those neurotangles, they are amyloid proteins. So we are able to develop antibodies to those amyloid proteins. So if we could give them, we nullify them and hoping they will improve our cognitive functions. But unfortunately, we have two which have been approved by FDA. The studies were very small, and we have to accumulate some knowledge and understanding of this one more before it becomes widely used, because biologics have been approved for everything these days. Again, I am lowest on the totem pole. I'm in a primary care physician, so I have no way to make a judgment. But what I am seeing is there is so many biologics have been approved with very small studies and with very short period of follow-up. We do not know eventually what we may find out. But those are the futuristic hopes which we have. But the problem is, why would we all create a problem and then try to take care of this medication? No matter which chronic disease which we pick up, it goes back to living clean. Living clean is taking care of your body, taking care of your emotion, mental stimulation, social interactions, and have some kind of a faith system, which, if nothing else, our spiritual domain provide us a kind of a defense mechanism system, which we could handle the realities of life, which many times they are not very pretty and they are not in line with what we want. If we have to summarize all of these, I could say with certainty, prevention is the only thing which we have, which we could do. If we start living cleaner life, my wish and hope is we will be able to prevent these neurocognitive disorders, which involves dementia and memory loss. In the end, let's summarize. What predisposes you to dementia is your age. The older you get, there's a natural history of each cell has to decrease its function. Genetics, family history, your personal lifestyle, what you eat, how much you sleep, how you manage your stress, how much you smoke, drink, your emotional being, your anxiety level, your stress level. If you maintain these things, you will be able to prevent it. At least that is where we have the best evidence so far. I put together the questions we asked all our patients, questions like we run a constant survey and we ask them, what are the questions they have for us, or what are the things they want me to repeat or kind of emphasize. The first question was like, what dementia is? Dementia is not only, it's not a one domain memory, which is the problem. In case of dementia, you have a global cognitive failure, meaning you have a problem with attention, concentration, executive functioning, thinking, planning, critically making decisions, then storing that information, retrieving that information, and then problem with the language, problem with learning, writing, and also your ability to navigate in this environment. It's not as simple. It is a broad, it has a lot of domains of this thing is. And occasional second thing, which is occasionally not remembering where your keys are. You didn't remember who to call people for birthday. You went to shopping and you forgot where did you park, or you forgot why you are here. unless they become significantly impacting your ADLs and IDLs, that is not a problem. Next is, what are the medications for dementia? As I mentioned just now, we have medications which are trying to improve acetylcholine in the neuro cleft or the synapses. But those medications have a lot of side effects. Their efficacy is there, but we have no way to predict or to follow the efficacy part. Next comes in is, what are the newer medications? Is approved monoclonal antibodies against those neurotangles or the amyloid proteins. They are very new. I think they are their future. What is the best? Next question was, what is the best advice for dementia? We are, all of us are on this journey together. Believe me, in preparing for these live sessions, I spend significant amount of time kind of self-introspect my life too. Like any other human being, we all fall to lowest common denominator. And I know that I was making the same mistakes which you guys might be making. But now I've changed my life. I exercise regularly. I sleep well. God is very good. I was able to manage my stress level always. I tend to believe that I manage it very well. I am doing a lot of mental stimulation and cognitive exercise, and doing this live session actually is one part of that too. Then create some social interaction with you. If anybody who listened to it, even one person listened to it, I've made hopefully a change in that. So I'm just trying to develop this part, and that's my wish and hope for you. This one is, so prevention is the biggest, because if you can't prevent this one, then you will be having a major issue with that part. I'm just looking at my question list. Then was the question is, what is the stages of dementia? I think we've passed through initial occasional lapses in our cognitive function, which we alluded to as not remembering where the car is, not able to recognize people, not able to recall their names, to when it starts our living. And that is a major problem which we have. When we start affecting how we live, that's where it becomes a disease. I think any talk, if we don't talk about the burden this disease it creates on the caregiver. Just imagine now, you are a caregiver of somebody who has memory loss. A, it is physically, emotionally, financially, it's very taxing. It is very difficult to hold your composure 24 hours when you're dealing with a person who has a dementia. They are high risk for complications. They are very high-end users of healthcare services and caregivers' time and attention, which is a very scarce resource. So it is very difficult. I salute to all those daughters, sons, daughter-in-laws, and healthcare community in general who care for these people. And it's not easy, and I feel your pain. And let's all understand it more and make the things more palatable for all of us. Next was, what are the radiological studies are needed for the diagnosis of dementia? There is no specific CT, MRI, or lumbar puncture or PET scan you need for the diagnosis. As a diagnosis is both based on your clinical history and social functioning at home. But if you have a risk factor for certain reasons for you to develop memory loss, then your physician may order any of these tests. But I cannot answer this question in kind of a blanket statement that you have this, you need this test. No, I think it will be your physician has to decide about that. Next question was, what are the different type of dementias? Remember, I elaborated on two. Alzheimer's disease, where you have neurotangles, you're creating extra protein in the brain, which is interfering with the functioning of your normal. And then is the second is your vascular dementia. Third is your Lewy body dementia, then the frontoparietal, the frontal lobe goes through degeneration and you'll start losing executive functions. So these are the different kind. Then dementia is more common in people who have a Parkinson's disease and people who are on anticholinergic medication. What will be the strongest message I want to give you? If you're having a memory problem, pick up all medications, also all the over-the-counter medications, any herbal products, take it to your physician, have them evaluated. Every visit you come in, we look at your medications, we review it. But we are only as good as what you provide us the information. If you don't give us the clean list for that, we will not be able to help you with that part. But I think one of the tests or the biggest request I have as a physician, always keep appropriate list of your medications with you and bring it with you all the time. And do not take all those anticholinergic PM medications because they do impair your memory. And if you need a medication and your physician prescribes it, ask them that it will how it will affect your memory. And I'm very sure they will make different decisions if you are cognizant of that. We as a physician, we always check those things. Not only we are trained to do that, our electronic medical records have built-in artificial intelligence. They stop us. There are hard stops right in our electronic medical records. So we use technology to the fullest. And also we have the pharmacists. They are very good in picking up, and we get calls all the time if they are not convinced that we made the right decision, and we all are in the partner in that. Next question which we have is, what is the quickest test which we could do in primary care offices or at home to self-test myself whether I have memory problem or not? I think you cannot give yourself a memory test, but your family member can or whosoever is. It's a simple test which is statistically validated. It is called mini-cog test. And that's what you do is you are told to remember three things which are not related. And you're told, okay, these are the things. And then after a certain amount of time, you're asked to repeat them. That's one. Then you're told to draw a clock, and you have to put the hours in the clock. And then your whosoever is administering test to you, they will ask you, okay, draw 10, whatever they fancy them at that time. And if you are able to recall everything, and it has a score of 30, and it will go through that. But there are a lot of statistically evaluated neuropsychological testing, like mini mental status examination, and then New Orleans. They all are well and good, but in primary care, I think mini-cog will be very effective. And then you must make sure you manage your emotions better. If you're depressed or extremely nervous, it will hijack your intellectual capabilities. You could make a genius and convert him into idiot very quickly if you have make them extremely nervous and depressed. So anxiety and depression are very common mimicker of memory loss. We see all the time, like we have a senior who lost their partner, and suddenly a month later they come in, the family brings that they are developing memory, they are getting demented. They're not getting demented, they're extremely depressed and they're grieving. Then next question was, music and sports have any role in management of dementia? I would say anything which will stimulate your brain and give you a social interaction will help you with the memory loss. And I'm for it. And it is proven over and over. People who are involved, they love music, they could dance, or they can involve into all social activities. You will have a lesser chances of developing dementia. I hope this podcast was of some help to you. My wish was to elaborate more and not leverage your horizon that is a preventable disease. Second, don't look at isolated memory problem. It is all domains of your thought or cognition which gets affected, and it is not a problem till it starts affecting your ability to live independently or you being cared for. It will lead to a lot of behavioral issues, a lot of chronic medical problems, and by and large, it is a preventable. Let's all work together to develop healthy lifestyle and try to prevent memory loss, dementia, and Alzheimer's disease, and vascular dementia. Thank you very much for your attention. I request, please subscribe to our channel, and above all, comment on our content, because this will help us to make better and produce better content every week. Thank you very much.